welcome to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for The Creative Pen, and today I'm interviewing Alexis Grant. Alexis is a newspaper journalist writing her first book currently, a travel memoir about her travels in Africa. She also has a blog, The Aspiring Author, where she talks about her writing and publishing journey. Welcome, Alexis.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you on. So maybe you could just start by telling us a bit about you and about your writing background. You know, are you still a journalist while you're writing? And maybe you could just talk a bit about that.
Sure. I'm a newspaper journalist by training. Until the middle of last year, I worked for the Houston Chronicle, which is a large daily newspaper in Texas. And there I was a health reporter. And I also have a master's degree in journalism. And yes, I still consider myself a journalist while I'm writing this book. And I do accept some freelance assignments while I'm writing, although I try to focus most of my time and energy on my book.
Can you maybe talk a bit about this book then, your travel book, and the trip that inspired it?
Yeah, when I left my job in the middle of last year, I decided to travel in Africa. And so I wanted to have a theme to my trip, and so I picked French-speaking Africa. And I started in Senegal, West Africa. So I went to Senegal, Mali, Burkina Faso, Ghana. Then I hopped down to Cameroon for a bit and did a little bit in South Africa and then over to Madagascar. It was a total of 6 months. And I blogged. I had a travel blog while I was there. And I had always wanted to write a travel memoir, but I wasn't sure that this was going to be the right time for me. And it wasn't really until the end of my trip that I realized that I really had enough stories, I had met enough people, had enough of an experience to write a book. And so when I got back in January, which was the beginning of this year, I started writing my first book, which is going to be a travel memoir, and that's what I'm working on now. And it's a lot of it is about what it was like to travel as a woman in Africa. And I was backpacking solo, so that's a big theme of the book. Although I met so many people that a lot of the time I wasn't really traveling alone, even though I was backpacking solo. But I like to say, even though you're backpacking solo, you're not always alone. And so that's what I'm working on now. I'm about 10 months into the project, and I've almost finished a draft of the book.
Wow, that's amazing. I've got a few questions out of that then. So first off, you said French-speaking Africa. So did you learn French before you left?
Yeah, I knew a bit of French already. And part of the reason why I chose French-speaking Africa is because I wanted to improve my French. And I'd actually been to Central Africa once before. I studied there as a college student. I did a semester in Cameroon, and that was where I really learned French. And so I wanted to go back there, and that was part of the reason why I chose Africa to begin with.
Mm. No, that's really interesting. And the other thing is, you said you wrote a travel blog while you were there. So first of all, is that got a URL so people can go and see it?
Yes, for sure. The easiest way to get to it actually is to go to my website, which is alexisgrant.com. But you can also go to the travel blog directly, and it's at alonzi.wordpress.com. And it's a little bit difficult to find because it's a French word, but it's alonsy.wordpress.com.
Super. And I guess the other question I have there is, well, another thing on the blog. So did you always find sort of internet cafes, or did you take a small laptop, or how did you actually blog whilst you were in these countries?
It was really hard and frustrating at times. I did take a small laptop with me. I took a really, really tiny one. It was new at the time. It's called an EEPC. Mm-hmm. Those really tiny laptops you'll see around. And so I had that with me, and occasionally I could find Wi-Fi. But I also hopped into a lot of internet cafes. And so I would take I had a small notebook with me at all times, and I basically wrote out my blog entries ahead of time. And so whenever I could find an internet cafe, I would transcribe my blog entries onto the blog and then try to upload it. the hardest thing really was getting photos on the blog, because, you know, everyone likes to see photos when you're traveling, and I really wanted to have photos up there. But the internet connections in Africa, as you can imagine, weren't always that great, and so it was really difficult sometimes and frustrating to get those photos up there. But I managed to do it.
Yeah. And did you have in your mind that you were going to write the book? You know, while you're obviously putting in a lot of effort to write down what was going on.
I thought about it, but I don't think I really considered it seriously until the end of my trip. And at that point, I was really glad that I had put all that effort into the travel blog, because now it's serving as a skeleton for my book. And obviously, when you write a book, you need, from a blog, you need a lot more than what the blog was. It's taking a lot more work than what I had on the blog. But still, I'm really happy that I had those blog entries, because now occasionally I go back and there's details on the blog or in my notebook that I wouldn't have remembered.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I'm interested in writing travel as well. And you kind of think, well, you have to be writing all the time whilst you're traveling. Otherwise, you forget tiny little details that make a big difference, I guess, to the text.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I'm a journalist, so I'm naturally always taking notes. And I freelanced several stories while I was in Africa, so that helped as well. And just the fact that I'm always taking notes and I'm always writing down things, you know, naturally, that helped. So I came home with about 7 notebooks. So even if I had planned to write the book, I don't think I would have taken any more notes than I already had.
Yeah. And then I guess talking about the travel memoir, is that a kind of, you know, is there a writer that you're aspiring to be like in that genre? Is there, like I read, for example, William Dalrymple, you know, about India and stuff like that. Is there anyone you aspire to be in that kind of niche?
Not really. I mean, I do read a lot of travel memoirs, and I have a whole bookshelf here right in front of me of travel memoirs written by women. And I guess, honestly, I'm trying to fill a niche that isn't there.
Mm.
And what I'm trying to write about is, when I read travel memoirs, I kind of complain to some of my friends. I see a lot of women are traveling to find love. And even when I was traveling, sometimes other travelers would say, oh, have you met anyone yet? Have you fallen in love? And I would always say, you know, that's not really why I'm traveling. I'm not running away from any relationship. And I'm not traveling to fall in love. I'm traveling for myself. And this was a trip that I always wanted to take for myself. And so when I'm writing this book, that's kind of a theme of my book, is that and I think that kind of puts me apart from some other travel writers, is that the theme of my book is not a relationship. And I think that's kind of freeing for some women to read.
Mm, that's fantastic. And, you know, you could probably capitalize on the eat, pray, love thing by saying, I am not eat, pray, love.
Yeah, and I loved eat, pray, love for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
But exactly, I'm kind of the opposite of the eat, pray, love for that reason.
No, that's really good to know. I love that. I think it's fantastic. okay, so also another reason I wanted to talk to you is you recently went on a writing retreat. So maybe you could tell us a bit about that, how the opportunity came about and how you actually found a retreat.
Sure. When I first started writing my book, I heard from another author that there are these things out there called writers' residencies or artist colonies. And so I started researching online, and I applied to several of them, including Hambidge, which is the one that I originally, that I ended up going to. And I ended up going to Hambidge for 5 weeks. I think the way that I found Hambidge was through a website called the Alliance of Artists Communities, and that was really what I wanted to tell your readers about, because this is the best resource for finding artist residencies. You can sign up. I think it's about $25 a year, which really isn't too expensive to have access to their database, and you can search through all of the artist residencies in the U.S. and around the world. And you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter that they'll send you that lets you know about upcoming deadlines.
Mm.
And it's funny, because I really didn't consider myself an artist when I started looking at this, and I thought, well, do I really want to apply for an artist residency when I can still consider myself a journalist? But it ended up being really quite a good fit for me. And so I think when you're looking for something like this, what you want to consider, and I actually have a post on my blog that's called How to Find and Apply to Writer's Colonies.
Brilliant.
Because all of them are, everyone is different. No artist residency is like another. And so some of them you have to pay for, some of them you don't. Although, when I first applied to Handbidge, which costs, I think, about $150 a week, I knew that I wouldn't be able to go unless I was awarded a scholarship, and I did get their scholarship, and that's how I could afford to go to this place. And so you want to consider lots of different factors, whether you can afford it, if it's not free, how difficult it is to get into, and when you sign up for the Alliance of Artist Communities and go through their database, they'll give you different statistics, like how many people apply and how many people are accepted, so you can see how prestigious different colonies are. You also want to consider, for example, like how far away from your home it is. So could you afford a plane ticket to get there if you need it? Do they give you food? At some places, they feed you, and that can cut down on costs as well. And then also some residencies are made up of just writers, and then other ones are made up of various types of artists. So at Handbidge, for example, there was 8 of us there, and it was always rotating. So each week, one or two or three artists would come and go, and we had different people there at any given time. And we usually had a few writers, but there was also a visual artist or two, and a composer, and a potter, for example. And it was really just a great place to meet people and feel the creative energy.
Wow, it just sounds so lovely.
It really sounds great.
So how did that 5 weeks help the development of your book?
Oh, it was so much better than I expected. And I didn't know what to expect because it was my first time going to one of these places. But for one, it was a place to write. And I think a lot of people would say, I don't really need that. And to be honest, I didn't really need that because I have a home office and I have a quiet space at home. But when I got there, I was shown to my cabin, which was a cabin in the woods. It was very quiet, even more quiet than my quiet home office. And so I produced a lot while I was there, and it wasn't just because of the quiet space. It was because of the creativity. So I basically had all day to myself where no one was going to bother me. And then at night, all of the artists got together, and we had dinner together, which was cooked by a vegetarian chef that they provided for us. And we talked, and sometimes we talked about our projects, and sometimes we just talked about other things that were going on in our lives. And it was just really nice to be in the company of other people who were working on long-term projects, and that's kind of something that I'm lacking when I'm working at home. And I bet a lot of people who are listening to this podcast can relate to the writer's life. It can sometimes be lonely, and that's new for me since I'm used to working in a newsroom and having lots of feedback and lots of people read my stories and edit and work with me. It's hard for me sometimes to work all day alone at home. And so having this interaction at night with other people who were struggling with the same difficulties in their work and they understood where I was coming from, I just really felt like I had this support network of people who really fed this creative energy into me. And because of that, I produced chapters and scenes and pieces of my book that I don't think I would have produced at home.
Wow. It sounds brilliant. And you also wrote quite a reflective piece about being on retreat that wasn't, I guess, so much about the writing, but about you personally. Perhaps you could also talk about the personal changes from the retreat.
Sure. Yes. And there was another component that I haven't yet mentioned, and that was the nature. This particular place that I went to, Handbidge, is located in Georgia, in northern Georgia, in the mountains, on 600 acres. And so I spent a lot of time walking in the woods, and that was kind of my break in the middle of the day, and did a lot of thinking. And I think the combination of kind of the alone time and nature, and then interaction with the other artists that I just found to be really inspiring, particularly because a few of them were a little bit ahead of me in their career. I just, for the first time, I felt like maybe I could make a life for myself out of writing books. And since this is the first time I've written a book, it's kind of a test case for me. Until then, I wasn't really sure whether I wanted to do that. And I'm still sort of feeling it out. And I guess being in that place and just feeling kind of that spiritual energy, I felt like for the first time maybe that was something that I want to do with my life.
That's fantastic. And that's when I guess when I read those posts, I was like, I really wanted to talk to you because, you know, so many of us have these busy, busy lives and, you know, taking time out to actually reflect and be quiet. And as you say, be in nature and not be rushing around all the time makes a big difference.
Yeah, there was kind of this clarity there that I guess only comes when you really have time to reflect. And it's not about just reflecting for an hour or a day, but really having a week or 2 weeks, or like I had 5 weeks to have let it seep in, you know, and really think.
Yeah, and I guess so then would you recommend a retreat to others, or should people just, I mean, I guess I get that, but probably people listening going, well, I couldn't take 5 weeks, you know, to go off into nature and, you know, be there. Do you think the smaller retreats are worth it, you know, even a weekend or a, you know, a long weekend or a week? Do you think that would be worth it?
Yeah, there was a woman when I was there who had come just for a week, and I think at Hambidge, I would have recommended at least 2 weeks, just because a week seemed like a little bit short. But there's definitely, I mean, if you can get a weekend, whatever you can take, you should take it. Because, like I said, being in my own office, it's quiet, but there's something special about being surrounded by other people who can help you be more creative. And if you can put yourself in that environment, why not? You know, you might create something that you didn't realize you had in you.
No, I think that's a really good tip. And I guess, you know, what about writing where you are, though? Because you've been writing this book for 10 months, you said. Obviously, you had 5 weeks at Hambidge, but most of the time you're writing in your office, aren't you? So have you got any tips for people who are trying to just write where they are?
Yeah. I mean, I'm writing where I am right now. Now I'm sitting in my home office talking to you. And I think even now, sometimes it helps to change it up. I occasionally go to coffee shops, and then I come back here and work. And people at home can do that, too, is, you know, go to the coffee shop, go to the library. Make force yourself to work at home. You can, even just sitting here, I've gotten plenty of my book done. So.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Down at home as well.
And how far away are you, you know, from finishing, and what are your sort of publishing plans?
Well, I've almost finished a draft. I think I'm maybe a week away from finishing a draft, and then I've got to revise. And so I think I'm probably a few months away from being done with the book. In terms of publishing, I am going to try to go the traditional route, but I know, especially from reading your website, that doesn't work for everyone. And so I think I'm just going to try to take it as it comes. If that doesn't work, I'll kind of cross that bridge when it comes to it.
Great. But you are going to pitch it to a publisher.
Yeah, I'm going to try. And part of my blog is about that process, and all of that is new to me. I'm just learning. And so I write a lot about, what I've learned on that front and, you know, what it's like going through that. So.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, then, you know, I'll take the next step.
Yeah, exactly. And as you said, you're going to make a life out of it. And I was talking to someone about this the other day. You know, I'm 35 next year, and I just think, well, I've got at least another 35 years left, you know, for my writing journey. And, you know, you probably feel the same way. I mean, I think you're younger than me, actually, but, you know, you've got the rest of your life. And if this first book, you know, whatever happens with this first book, this is not the end for you, is it? I mean, it's just the beginning.
That's right. And I think one of the things I struggle with is how I'm going to make money doing this. But even if I don't know, that's one of the things that I'm always thinking about. And it may be that I end up working full-time in journalism and writing on the side. It may be that I'm able to make enough money writing books full-time that I can just stick with that. But I think that will all, that, you know, like you said, I have my whole life ahead of me, and that will
come.
I'll figure it out. So.
And I actually interviewed another guy, Alastair Humphreys, a couple of months ago, and he basically makes money from speaking as well, about his travels. I don't know if you saw that, but I'll have to connect you to.
I've got that starred in my RSS feed. I haven't listened to it yet, but it's.
Oh, yeah. He's great, and he's, you know, he is now making money full time as a travel speaker and writer. So, you know, and he's written 3 travel books now. So yeah, you should definitely connect with him. Okay, so we're almost out of time, but a couple more questions. So you've obviously, you blogged while you were in Africa, and now you're blogging as an aspiring author. So has blogging helped your writing? Has it helped your platform building? And would you recommend it to others?
Blogging has helped me in all 3 of those ways. For one, the great thing about blogging when I was in Africa is now that blog is serving as a skeleton for my book. But it definitely makes me a better writer. I think when you blog, you have to have a different voice than when you do other types of writing, and so it helps me practice getting into a different voice. And what I mean by that is I like to have kind of a choppier, sort of funnier voice when I blog than when I write, obviously, journalism articles. And even compared to my book, which I think flows a little bit differently than my blog. But writing the blog forces me to write every day, and I think that makes me a better writer. And as you said, it's also good for my platform. I've connected with so many different types of people, from writers to editors to travelers to even a couple of agents through my blog, and I'm thinking that might even help me on the publishing route down the road, just because I'm getting myself out there and people can see who I am.
Oh, absolutely. That's brilliant. So I'm glad you said that about agents as well, because, you know, I really think the more you put yourself out there, the more attractive you become to publishers, you know, now with the industry. They want people who can sell. And, you know, you're doing that with your writing, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, it shows that you know how to write already just by blogging. That's another point, is that every time you write a blog post, it's got to be good, because you're selling yourself with every blog post. So when you have a blog, you know, you want every single thing that you put online to be quality, because somebody important could be reading that blog post.
That's exactly right. And I'm kind of looking back to my stuff from last December and thinking, do you know, I really need to rewrite that, because, you know, people can find things later on, can't they? And then you just go, oh,
yeah, I wish that occasionally too.
But then I guess we're all growing and learning, and over time, mm-hmm. you know, I certainly think my pieces have got better since last year. Okay, well, I actually had another random question for you about the book. Obviously, you met a lot of real people, and I wondered, with travel memoir, do you use people's real names, did you get permission from people, or how are you treating that kind of issue?
This is a good question, and a lot of this is new to me, because as a journalist, I'm taught to always use everyone's real name, obviously.
Yeah.
But in a travel memoir, the lines are blurred a little bit differently. And so what I'm trying to do is use people's real names in most of the cases. But no, I haven't checked with anyone. And so in the cases when I think, that I might be portraying someone in a way that they wouldn't want to be portrayed, or if I am putting someone in a spot that they wouldn't want to put in, I may change the name. And I haven't really right now I'm writing the entire book using everyone's real names, and then for my own benefit, and then I'm going to go back and change probably a handful of them. But everyone's in my book, everyone's names are only their first names anyhow. I don't really have anyone's last names in there, because the story is, it's my story. I do have a lot of characters in there, but there's not really a need for last names anyways, because it's a story about people, but it doesn't call for last names, so I don't need them. You know?
Yeah. No, it's just something I think about. you know, when we're all writing, you know, you've got to think about other people, haven't you? So that's fantastic advice, and it'd be really interesting to see how your book ends up. So I guess, how can people find out more about you and the book, and how can people get in touch with you?
Sure. The easiest way is to go to my website, which is alexisgrant.com. It's just my name.com. And on there you can see links to both of my blogs, my travel blog and my writing blog. You can also find my email, and it's alexiskgrant@yahoo.com. If you want to go right to my writing blog, that's an easy URL. It's alexisgrant.wordpress.com.
Fantastic. And you're on Twitter as well, aren't you?
Yep. And I'm on Twitter at Alexis Grant.
Fantastic, because, you know, we like to talk about Twitter on here.
Of course. I forgot about that handle.
Yeah, exactly. And, okay, well, that's really brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Hey, thanks. It's great to talk to you as well.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!